Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 226. Dream Sight with Jane Teresa Anderson. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
Closed my eyes and didn't read a lot of books and didn't read a lot of people for many years, and set up a group of about 300 or 400 people all over the world that were interested in dreams, and just worked with them. I collected dreams from them. I got them to record things like what issues were happening in their lives, what emotions they were feeling, and compared what was happening to them in the day to the dreams that they had at night, and then worked with them. I got them to do experiments in their dreams, and really did that on and off for a number of years, and only once I'd really got to a point where I felt I've waded in the water by myself as if no one else has ever done this work, and found what I wanted to find, found a way that I could work with dreams, and then started to read everyone else, which of course has been a great pleasure.
That was the voice of my guest, dream analyst and author, Jane Teresa Anderson. Jane Teresa Anderson is an internationally acclaimed dream analyst and personal development coach living in Brisbane, Australia, consulting worldwide through her website at www.dream.net.au. She's the author of 6 books, including Dream Alchemy and 101 Dream Interpretation Tips, a regular guest on Australian television, and an accomplished radio dream talkback expert, interpreting callers' dreams on more than 1,500 shows. She also hosts her own weekly podcast series, The Dream Show. Jane Teresa has a Bachelor of Science honors degree in zoology, specializing in neurophysiology from the University of Glasgow. Jane Teresa reports that she's been researching dreams since 1992 and developing and teaching exercises that shift perspective and transform unconscious limiting beliefs. As a dream analyst, Jane Teresa says she's able to reveal a dreamer's unconscious mindset and show how this is affecting the dreamer's waking life. She goes on to create exercises based on this insight to help transform the dreamer's mindset for more enriching outcomes. Now, here's the interview. Jane Teresa Anderson, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you, David.
I'm so pleased to have you on the show. Dream work has been a longstanding interest of my own, and I've done a number of interviews on this series with a variety of dream workers. And one of my listeners felt there was a significant gap in as much as you hadn't been included. And this person urgently insisted that I get you on the show.
Well, thank you, anonymous listener. I'm really pleased about that.
Yeah, well, they weren't anonymous. It's just I don't have their name in front of me. But and you have your own podcast, because I found actually a couple of podcasts that you put out, and I listened to 2 of your shows and found them to be very, very good.
Thank you very much. I've just been doing it weekly for about, well, we're up to episode 33, so I've been doing it for 33 weeks. I'm having a ball. I love it. I know you've been going for much, much longer. You've been going for 4 or 5 years.
Yes, I'm in my 5th year, and you have a wonderful voice, I must say.
Thank you very much.
Are you professionally trained? Do you have a professionally trained voice?
That is such an intriguing question, and I'm smiling all over my face, because as a child, I had I have the accent I have more or less now, and people used to make fun of it, and I also had a bit of a lisp. And I've managed very well over many years on radio and television with my lisp until a year and a half ago when a friend of mine said, you know, Jane, she's a professional voice coach, you know, Jane, it's now time to get rid of your lisp and I'm just going to gift you with a couple of voice lessons. So I went along to these voice lessons thinking, well, I've survived, you know, fine this far. And I talked to the voice instructor and she said, it'll probably take a couple of lessons to get rid of your lisp. Now, once we've done that, we're going to work on your F's, your V's, your M's, your N's. And I thought, my God, I had no idea there was so much wrong with my voice. It's a year down the track. It was a stunning experience. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think my voice is better. It's not professionally trained, but hey, I don't really think it was that bad before.
No, well, it's wonderful. I love your diction. I love, you know, some Australian accents to my American ear sound a bit harsh, a bit grating. Yours doesn't. It's very lovely.
I was born in England, so my original accent is English. I lived in Scotland for a long time where I had to learn to speak very, very fast because they are fast speakers. And I've lived in a lot of places around the world. So although I've lived in Australia now for more than 25 years, and you can definitely pick up an Australian twang, it's not as harsh as an Australian accent can be. So I'm kind of a universal speaker. I don't have any American tones in my voice, though.
Well, that explains it, is that you have a kind of a mongrel voice. and you are in Australia right now. I should point out that for me, it's Monday, and for you, I guess it's Tuesday morning.
It's Tuesday morning. We're just, you know, the leading edge of the future down here, this end of the globe.
Right. That's a good way to look at it. Now, your background was initially in zoology, where you took honors in a Bachelor of Science program. So how did you get involved with dreams?
It took a while. I was kind of, I guess I was a born scientist because I was the kind of child that drove my mother mad by just asking, why? But why? But how does that happen? But why? So I kind of pursued that and went down the science route, and I'm really glad that I did. And while I was studying zoology, I really focused on neurophysiology because for me, that was the most challenging. You know, I'm talking now about 25 years ago when I went through university, and there were lots of questions and very few answers in neurophysiology, so that just suited me fine. I've been a very vivid dreamer since a child and always interested in my dreams. And it was probably about 10 years after I left university that I really became deeply interested in dreams and realized that when people were talking about their dreams, I used to think, how come you can't really sort of even begin to get a grip on what that dream is reflecting about you and your life? And went in from there. And I found the science background extremely interesting and helpful in really, you know, forging my own way in dream analysis.
Well, are there particular sources or mentors or influences that have shaped the work that you do today?
I started off in a very Jungian fashion, and that's probably still, you know, the main thrust of what I do.
Okay.
But I also... I also did quite a brave thing. I kind of closed my eyes and didn't read a lot of books and didn't read a lot of people for many years, and set up a group of about 300 or 400 people all over the world that were interested in dreams and just worked with them. I collected dreams from them. I got them to record things like what issues were happening in their lives, what emotions they were feeling, and compared what was happening to them in the day to the dreams that they had in at night, and then worked with them. I got them to do experiments in their dreams, and really did that on and off for a number of years. And only once I'd really got to a point where I felt I've waded in the water by myself as if no one else has ever done this work, and found what I wanted to find, found a way that I could work with dreams, and then started to read everyone else, which of course has been a great pleasure.
Well, what an original approach. It's very, very original and very refreshing, and also very scientific of you.
I guess that's the bottom line, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah. So in a broad sense, you know, where do you think dreams come from? In other words, what's your theory of dreaming at this point?
Yeah. To me, what happens when you dream is that your dreaming brain, aka mind, aka soul, it's all semantics, are basically reviewing the last 24 to 48 hours of your both conscious and unconscious experiences. And you can see this in the dreams. You can see snippets of the issues and feelings that the person was exploring consciously and unconsciously in the day or two before. And so that what the dream is really doing in its own unique and bizarre way is trying to make sense of the world as you see it on a night-to-night basis. So you can then look into those dreams and say, that's interesting. When I really look into this dream, I can see how my mind is working. I can see how my mind is processing my waking experiences of the last day or two. And of course, you know, that's when you then see jumps back into the past, references to the past in your dreams, people that you used to know, places that you used to go. And that's where your dreaming brain is kind of like filing away and going, that experience yesterday is very, very similar to what happened when you were three. I think I'll just file that experience alongside that. And so, you know, that I'm being a little bit facetious, but I think it's a metaphor that kind of works. So what you really get is you wake up each morning with maybe, just maybe, a slightly shifted perspective of what you personally think this life is all about. Mostly, and unfortunately, we look at each experience that we've had over the last 2 days and think, yeah, that's like the past, same old, and kind of reinforce and set in concrete our original beliefs, which were probably, you know, way off, way wrong anyway. But occasionally you have a dream that shows that you actually have a breakthrough and you begin to see life in a whole new way. You know, you have an experience and you say in your dream, well, that may be similar to what happened to me when I was three, but maybe that's not right. Maybe it's more like this. And you actually see the beliefs being either cemented according to the past or broken down and reformed, which then become your blueprint for how you act in the future.
You mentioned beliefs, and having just listened to to your last two podcasts, I heard there you emphasize that dreams are about feelings and about beliefs. And I thought that was interesting because I don't often tag on the beliefs part in my own thinking, but it does make sense to me.
Again, you know, David, it is kind of semantics, I guess, in the end. And, you know, as you will know from your own dream work, the most most surreal dreams are usually those that are really coming from deep emotions and our emotional processing of life and our feelings. But it is our emotional responses to life that form our beliefs that we then kind of automatically respond to on a day-to-day basis. You know, we act according to, as I see it, we act according to a belief, usually an unconscious belief, that has become our individual belief because of a certain emotional experience that we've had. So I kind of see the two as interrelated, but when I'm doing work with people, I find that they can often relate more to the belief because it's like taking a step back and going, yeah, okay. Yeah, I hadn't noticed that before, but I can see that a person with an unconscious belief like that would probably act in life in this way, would probably get the kind of results that, hey, like I'm getting here. So yes, I guess I must have this unconscious belief.
Yes, yes. And why do you think, I know this is something you remarked on as well, that sometimes we have difficulty seeing into our own dreams. We can see into other people's dreams the significance much more readily in general than we can with our own. Why do you think that is?
Oh, that's so true. I think across the board, whether it's our dreams, our lives, anything, it's much easier to see what's going on for other people than for ourselves.
Right. But we know what they should be doing, right?
Exactly. I'm biting my tongue and I'm not telling you, but but our dreams in particular, because our dreams are processing our experiences of the last day or two, which are primarily usually focused on whatever issues we've got, what we're struggling with, what is challenging us. But by definition, our dreams are dealing with stuff that we actually can't really see, that it would be really, really lovely if we could see this about ourselves. So looking at your dream as your first point of entry, apart from someone else telling you what to do, your first point of entry is saying, hey, did you know this about yourself? You go, well, I really would like to better see that. Well, look, here's the dream. So dreams are dealing with stuff that we can't see, and that's why they're there.
Okay. Now, is there anything that you see as distinctive or unique about your approach?
Oh, apart from my accent. I'm sure that what I'm about to say every other dream analyst does in different ways, but I would guess that if I were to really define what it is that I do, I do a two-step approach with when I work with clients. I say interpreting the dream is number one. And once we both come to an understanding of what the dream is about, you know, and the dreamer gets to the point of going, yeah, I can see that that dream is reflecting something about the way that I see my life, I don't leave it there. I then move to step two, which I call dream alchemy. And that is setting an exercise with the dreamer, and I call the exercise a practice. So what I do is create and design dream alchemy practices. Now, these may be visualizations. They may be a strange kind of affirmation. There may be body work, there may be artwork. And of course, many of these categories are familiar to dream workers. You know, it's normal to work with these modalities. But I guess I use them in my own unique way and call those dream alchemy practices. So I set people, dreamers off, doing these dream alchemy practices for 4 to 6 weeks. And I usually work out either by talking with the dreamer or by looking at the particular way they express themselves in the dream and when they talk about or write about the dream. I pick whether they're a person that would work better with visual, work better with words, work better with body movements and so on, and set an alchemy practice for them to do that. And what I say to the dreamer in everyday language is, now look, if you go away and you want to say an affirmation about your life, and you want to say, for example, I attract the perfect mate to me. I attract the perfect mate. I'm wonderful. Whatever your affirmation is about attracting a perfect mate, and then you think, well, why isn't this happening? Which, of course, is common. It's usually because your unconscious mind has a different idea about that. You know, I don't want to attract a mate because, you know, whatever reason you may have. So this is why, for example, a lot of affirmations won't work. And I say to people, just imagine, you know, your unconscious mind is not listening to you. It's got its own agenda. Just imagine you could find a language to talk to your unconscious mind to change those beliefs. Now, your dreams are the portal for that, because your dreams show your own dreaming mind's pick of the symbols that work for you. So in a sense, your dreams are using the language of your personal and unique unconscious mind. So use those symbols to talk back to your unconscious mind, and you're in a powerful position. So what I do with dreams is, okay, interpret the dream, create a dream alchemy practice, which is working with the symbols that your unconscious mind understands to reprogram any unconscious beliefs revealed by the dream, which aren't really working well for you, so that when you then go on with your life, you'll find that the things that you consciously want to achieve and do in your life are not obstructed by those unconscious beliefs. So that's the way that I work with dreams. I'm aware, David, that there's another thing that I know, particularly in America, there's a strong idea that in dream work, one should never tell the dreamer what the interpretation is, and that there's a very strong force for reflecting back questions to the dreamer, so the dreamer ultimately owns the interpretation of the dream. And I do actually, you know, 99% subscribe to that and use that method myself. But I also understand from talking to quite a few people that work within America that they're not quite so sure about my system, where I also am often quite happy to say to a dreamer after I've asked them a lot of questions and worked with them to say, you know, I really feel your dream is suggesting this about your life. Can you see that? So I'd probably take that little extra step and not so much imposing my interpretation, but courageously reading the dream.
Yes, well, I was struck by that. And at first, I think I was maybe just a little put off. So it's interesting that you bring that up, because you know, what I saw that you were doing was sort of, at least in some cases, and as I think I got this impression before I actually listened to a couple of your podcasts, but the idea of sort of analyzing dreams blindly, that is, without first getting the associations. And there's that strong bias, at least in this country and the people I'm exposed to, that, you know, that you're not supposed to rush to an interpretation until you've heard something about the person's life. And I know that you kind of give, quotes, dream interpretations over the radio, where maybe that isn't always possible. And to be completely honest, though, I have to say that often, you know, I hear a dream and you know, stuff immediately comes to my mind. I'm listening at a metaphorical level. And I, between you and me, I think I do understand the dream often to quite a large degree, not completely, but I certainly get a strong message often, even before I have heard those associations.
Yes, and I think that's the value of being the, you know, as objective as you can as the dream worker, because you're standing outside the dream, which is, as you know, say, is often a metaphor, and it's not just a matter of going in and looking at the individual symbols, as you know, it's the way the symbols put together, the way the whole picture looks, the way the whole storyline puts, hangs together, so that as the analyst, you can often see the so many connections between different parts of the dream that all underline each other, that are all working in the same resonance, that it's kind of like the confirmation is shouting out all over. And I'll often find also that with working with a client, and this isn't a kind of show-off thing, it's just something that I've noticed, that if I can say to the client without knowing anything about them, ah, what happened to you when you were 26? There's the issue of bloody, bloody, blah. And they look at you like, how could you possibly know that about me? Now, that has the effect, as it's not done as a kind of showmanship thing, and I'm not saying that I always get it right either, but if you can make that connection and the dreamer just goes, how could you know that about me? It's like sometimes shattering a shield around them. It's like shattering an illusion. You know, there's some kind of magic that happens within them that breaks something that opens their eyes, and they're more ready to hear or to see something about themselves through their own dream. So I guess, that is one aspect. Once I've done that off air, if I'm not doing it on radio, you know, obviously I normally work very intensively with people, I then, having got to that point, then say, well, how can you relate to this? Tell me what's happening in your life. And I guess another part of me sometimes thinks, if I say to a dreamer, oh, you know, tell me about your dream, and they tell me the dream, and then I say, well, what's happening in your life? And they tell me this, you know, what's happening in their life, and then I reflect back some stuff from the dream, they could be sitting there thinking, well, I've just told her what's happening in my life. So, you know, any Tom, Dick or Harry could tell me what she's telling now. Mm-hmm. She's just making that up to fit what I've just said. And I'm taking an extreme point of view here, whereas if you can demonstrate that the dream itself does have some quality or some reflection of the dreamer's life that is sitting there in the picture, that both the dreamer and I can look into and go, look at that. Look, see that bit over there. That suggests this is maybe happening in your life. Can you relate to that? When I do radio, I've been doing it since 1992 across all kinds of stations, you know, the deadly serious, deeply intellectual to the quick, you've got 5 seconds between two hip-hop songs kind of things.
Wow.
You know? Yeah, and I think, well, what am I doing this for? I'm doing it to get some kind of awareness out there that dreams are important. That's number one. And if I can just get something across, you know, in that sense, and that's where I'll often go for the quick grab, what happened for you 26 years ago? How could you know that about myself? I've just put out a message that dreams are not stupid. They're not common sense. There's got some meaning in them that can be helpful to people. And so, you know, I think there's possibly value in I was going somewhere with that. I have no idea where I was going with that.
Well, that's okay. No, I really liked especially what you were saying about the idea that by being able to tell them something about themselves before you've gotten their associations, before you've learned about their life, that you're showing them that, hey, there is something that's being revealed here in the dream.
Yes,
the dream is speaking very clearly. So that was a wonderful point that you just made. Let me just step back a little bit before we talk more about your approach and ask you, have your own dreams impacted or guided your life?
Oh, massively, yes. And there have been so many, it's always difficult to pick out one. But I would say, before I really understood how to interpret dreams, they had an impact in that they were mystery, just as they are to every other person that's a vivid dreamer. You know, you wake up and you're kind of amazed at what went on in your dream last night. So I guess I got from that a sense of mystery and a sense of, you know, there is so much we don't know even as a scientist. And that was kind of like the early foundling of it. But of course, as I've been, you know, grown into interpreting, and my own approach to my dreams is if I don't get them straight away, which I will say with 75% of them, I go, okay, right, stop. Just imagine someone has come to you with this dream. What would you say? And then I can instantly see through it. I'd say I'm a totally different person to who I was when I started interpreting dreams. I mean, yeah, people would still recognize me. I've got the same kind of personality, but my approach to life is completely different. My understanding of life is completely different. Everything is completely different. And that is, you know, 100% down to my dreams. And of course, it's an ongoing process. And I find it just astounding and just absolutely amazing every, you know, more or less every night that I remember a dream, how clearly it all interrelates. Sometimes I ask myself the question, sometimes I think, you know how you can go into a shop and there are some dream dictionaries that can be very helpful, and there are a lot of dream dictionaries which are like medieval witches' tomes, you know, you can open them up. And sadly, a lot of people buy these, you know. What does a glass of water in my dream mean? It means you're going to travel overseas and meet a dark, handsome stranger. And I sometimes think, how did those dream dictionaries start? And I think they maybe started with people who paid attention to their dreams, and for them, dreaming of a glass of water did mean they would go overseas and meet a tall, dark, handsome stranger. So what they were producing in those kind of medieval dream dictionaries was their own personal dream dictionary. And so sometimes I wake up and interpret my own, and I'm so quick on them, and I think, are my interpretation skills just based on, you know, the kind of the kind of language that I'm learning from my own dreams? So every now and then I kind of wake myself up and really concentrate on a dream as, you know, someone that's come to me on their dream, and really cross-question myself and make sure that this isn't something that, you know, a whole theory and approach that I've developed because it suits me and working with my dreams. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, there are more theory questions I could ask you, but I know that you said that you'd be willing to take a crack at some listener dreams. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, so, that's good.
And so maybe we should get right into those to make sure we don't run out of time. And of course, we're not live, so you won't be able to get any feedback on their associations or your accuracy. But I still think listeners will appreciate a demonstration of how you work. And I might even get brave and share one or two of mine, too. So
that's lovely. Can I just put a little 10-second thing in here? Because I think that's what I wanted to say before, that when I do the radio, as long as the presenter is working with me, I'll usually say to the dream at the end, does that make sense? And most of them will say, yes, it does. So, you know, we have on air that demonstration of yes, which, of course, we're going to miss today. But, yeah, I'm here. I'm ready. Let's go.
Okay. So here's the first one. I dreamed that I went downstairs together with a little child. We were in a good mood and everything was joyful. We came to the basement and suddenly a door opened and an ugly, nasty guy came out. He was mean, ugly, big, fat, and very ugly. The guy comes out and we had a real scare. The child and I hastened back upstairs. We arrived under the roof in a room. At a round table, there was sitting a woman who was all blue, bright, shining blue. That was the attracting point. So I went there with the child, and the feeling was there that everything was good. I looked to the side, and the child was still at my side, and then the ugly man was standing there too, but still everything was all right.
Oh, that's beautiful. I would ask one question, and I would ask the dreamer, how old was the child? So I'm just going to pose and say that the child was 5 years old, just so we've got a number to work with here, okay? You've got the contrast. I always look for opposites in a dream, and you've got right downstairs in the bottom of the house in the basement, and you've got right up the top under the roof. So that's one set of opposites. And you've kind of got not quite opposites, but you've got the bad, ugly, fat thing.
Yes.
And you've got the lovely, beautiful feeling woman at the top as well. So there's kind of two opposites there. How I would put the whole dream together is I'd say this is someone that is, it's about something that happened 5 years ago, if that's the age of the child, or 5 months ago, or 5 weeks ago. I don't think it's about when the dreamer was five, but it may be. But it's most likely about what's been in that dreamer's life for 5 years, same length of age that the child is in the dream. And this is a dreamer who is really ready to playfully and joyfully explore her unconscious, to go down to the deep basement of herself and really start to get to terms with some stuff, dark stuff that's down there. And it's like, skippity, skippity, here we go. This is fun, full of joy. I'm really good, you know, happy about this. But what she meets is something really frightening and ugly and horrible. She or he is prepared for this because that's why they've gone down to the basement. But it's a whole lot more scary and ugly than they had anticipated. However, she does face this ugly belief, thought, feeling, experience, whatever it is. And having done that, then is somehow automatically returned up to a higher level, in this case under the roof, which is more the kind of higher self or the thinking or even maybe her spiritual self. And although she has faced this fear or faced this past experience from 5 years ago, she's still in need of a little bit more comfort, and that is the blue light in the dream and the lovely feeling around the woman. So it would depend on the dreamer's feeling about blue. But of course, a lot of people that work with dreams look at blue as the color of the chakra, you know, the communication chakra in the throat. So I'd say a lot of people look at blue as healing, and I'd ask the dreamer how she felt about blue. Yes. Other people would say, oh, blue's depressed, but that's not the feeling in the dream. This is joy.
Yes.
And so there's the feeling of, yeah, look, it's she comes to the end of the dream. She's faced this ugly fact about herself. It's still there. It's still with her at the end of the dream, but that's okay. And that's the ultimate aim of any dream work. It's not to kill the demon. It's to be with the demon and acknowledge it and go, yeah, yeah, that's part of my life, and that's okay.
Well, that all sounds really right on to me. I actually have a little background on that dream. It was submitted to me by a Gestalt dream worker in Germany, and he's working on a book about dreams, and this was from one of his clients. So this, in fact, is somebody who I believe is in therapy with him, and is, if I recall correctly, dealing with past traumatic issues from childhood. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm sure if that dreamer were to hear what you had to say, that they would recognize it as relating definitely to their dream. Now, here's another one from someone else. I don't have any background on it, but the person wrote, this is a dream that happened a short time after a major operation. The dream opens with myself walking in an unknown Midwestern-looking city. As I walk along, a large black dog begins to walk alongside me. The dog then gently takes my hand in its mouth and leads me to a hill where there are three churches which face each other. Two have their doors closed and one whose door is open, but in standing in the doorway in the room, the room was filled with a deep blackness. In parentheses, if you have ever been in a cave or mine without light, you may have an idea of the blackness. I stood there in a sense of unease, and that this was not a place for me. The dog then led me down the hill where a small girl was waiting for me, and the dog then left, and the child took my hand, and I was overcome with the feeling that this was my child, and a great wave of love filled me. I woke up at this point with tears in my eyes, and it has stayed with me for a few years.
Oh, that's absolutely fantastic too. Again, I would ask the age of the child. So let's say in this instance that the child is three, just for the sake of argument, and the dream is following an operation that the person had. So that is already a bit of background information. But I'd say that when, of course, you go through a physical operation, you might have something removed or something, you know, sorted or fixed in your body, but there's a corresponding part of your mind or your soul or your emotions or your beliefs that is then has to deal with that. So whatever the physical ailment was that was in the body was there as a reflection of the mind. And once that is surgically removed or taken away, it kind of exposes and releases the aspect of the mind or the soul that had held it there in the first place. So it's quite usual to have quite a stunning dream like this that then is dealing with what has been released as a result of intentionally choosing the operation. And my first thought about the black dog, and I may not be right, but you know, a lot of people talk about the black dog as being depression. You know, the black dog is the black dog means depression. Mm. And there could be a sense there of, particularly because of the way that the dreamer meets with his or her own child at the end. It's like a homecoming in the end, something he or she is integrated with at the end of the dream that is so good and so wonderful and stayed with this dreamer for all these years. So it could be that the dream has overcome or in the depression has then come to terms with what the depression was covering up in their lives. You know, depression is often there. Of course, there's also clinical, but can also be there to cover up and stop us from looking at what's underneath that. And there's a sense in the dream that the black dog has led the dreamer by the hand to a place ultimately where the black dog leaves, and a whole living, wonderful child that they feel very connected to is there in its place. So I think that is possibly one level of the interpretation. And at another level, and still the same dream, an animal in a dream reflects an instinct or a feeling within the dreamer. So again, there's this maybe black in this case can be unconscious, unknown. There's a sense of I'm being led. I'd ask the dreamer, what's the personality of the dog? And they might say it was a guide. And I'd say, mm-hmm. Okay, there's a part of yourself that even though you can't see it, that's dark, that's black, does know where you want to go, is guiding you. And you look at these three churches on the top of the hill. I would probably take to be three different spiritual or religious approaches that the dreamer has attempted in their life. Two they've closed the door on, one they have left open, but they look inside and it's just dark. It may be the kind of spirituality of looking deep into the unconscious mind, but whatever it is, they've turned their back on it. And what really works for them is not way up there on the top of the hill. It's actually in quite beautifully down there where it's grounded, where the dog leaves and the beautiful child takes over. It's nothing high and mighty. It's not at a higher level. It is grounded. It is good. And this is a dreamer finally connecting with an energy that they probably disconnected with and caused the initial physical disease, which they then had the operation for. Obviously, I'd be sitting down with a dreamer and working in from there, but that would be my quick take on it.
Well, you are such a good listener. I have to say, I'm very impressed by the way that you're able to take in all the details of the dream as well as you did.
I've had to practice that skill.
Yeah, and not only are you a fast talker, you're a fast thinker.
That has come from radio. So I have to say, you know, with radio, as you know from your podcast, David, you can't have a silence. You've got to keep talking. And I think, you know, having had to learn over the years to listen to a dream, start talking when the dreamer finishes while analyzing it at the same time, I was trained my brain, like, you know, maybe I should be selling the train your brain package, become an analyst and do radio talk pack.
Yes, really, really. Well, I must say you really rise to that challenge. Well, it'll be interesting to hear from this listener. I didn't attach their name to the dream. Do you have energy for more?
I do, yes.
Okay, well, this one is from listener Linda B., and she writes, I've been having recurring airport dreams for some time, and the common denominator is that I never seem to actually go anywhere. Either I miss the plane or there's a problem with my ticket. Here's my latest airport dream, about a week old. I park my car in the airport parking lot and go inside to find my gate. As I'm wandering around, I realize I decided earlier not to fly to my destination, but to drive. I try to find my way out of the airport back to the parking lot, but can't get out of the airport. I ask several people for help, but everyone says I have to put in a formal request. I do so, which involves filling out a form and depositing it in a red letterbox on the wall. Then I'm approached by a woman who is in charge of the requests. She says I can't leave the airport unless I give her my dogs. And she puts in parentheses, I have two dogs in real life. I tell her that she can get dogs of her own very easily. She doesn't have to take mine. There seems to be a discussion as to why she has to have mine that I can't remember the details of. The dream ends with me refusing to give her my dogs.
Okay.
She writes, I'd be very interested in the feedback on this dream, as is commonly the case when it comes to interpreting one's own dreams. It's hard to be completely objective.
Of course, yeah, absolutely. And well, a recurring dream, because in the way that I interpret dreams, I always, you know, begin by saying, well, a dream reflects what's been going on for you in the last 24 to 48 hours. So when it's a recurring dream, you can, you know, your first question is, well, how long have you been having this recurring dream? When did it start? And Linda B., I don't know when her started, but let's say she said, oh, it was 10 years ago. You'd say, okay, this recurring issue that's been in your life on a recurring basis for 10 years, for the same length of time that you've had this dream. And one of the beauties about a recurring dream is that because it tends to reflect the issue of the last 2 days, you can begin to pin it down, you know, keep a diary. And, oh, I had that dream again last night. What happened in the last couple of days? And why would this have started 10 years ago? So the dream has already gotten in without even speaking to an analyst. Now, the overall sense of this dream, of Linda B's dream, is I want to go somewhere, but I need to give permission. And I'm not allowed to. And then all sorts of obstacles come up. But that's the overall feeling. They won't let me. I need permission. And in particular, in this particular dream, and my guess is that the permission is different in each dream as she explores this issue. In this particular dream, the permission involves handing over a dog. It's almost like if she hands over her dogs, maybe she'll get on the plane or in the car. But of course, dreams can then bring up another obstacle. So this to me suggests that Linda B has, in her conscious waking world, has definite goals. You know, there's places she wants to go, things she wants to achieve. The plane is like big ideas. This is where I'm going in my life. This is what I want to do. Not necessarily physically going geographically, but, you know, your goal in life, what you want to do. But her unconscious mind is putting all sorts of obstacles in her way because everything in the dream reflects something about the dreamer. So no matter where her conscious decisions about where she wants mind is sabotaging left, right and center and stopping her going. But the clue in this particular dream is the two dogs. So the three dogs, and she said she's got two dogs in her life.
Yes.
So I'd be wanting to ask Linda, what do the dogs represent to you? Because that is what she's got to give up in the dream. So it can be as simple as she may have, if, for example, the dogs mean that she, you know, it spends a lot of time nurturing her dogs and really relishes nurturing her dogs, and her dogs for her are home and hearth and comfort, then they may symbolize in the dream that she maybe sabotages her direction in life and achieving her goals because her home, hearth and comfort values are much higher than the values that she's got for achieving the goals. Something in her unconscious mind is programmed to obstruct where she really wants to go. So I'd be delving deeper with this and then offering a dream alchemy practice, which I welcome Linda to get in contact with me privately, and I'll do that for free. A dream alchemy practice that will help her to address those unconscious beliefs and turn them around, dream end, or actually she might have a dream where she gets on the plane.
Yeah.
But the goal that it represents will suddenly be dead easy for her. So it's about giving herself permission. She probably had a childhood or something happen when the recurring dream first began where she had an authority issue, didn't give herself permission. You're not good enough. You can't do that. Who do you think you are? You don't deserve the ticket. You can't do that.
Okay.
Kind of belief.
Yeah, great. That all sounds right on. Well, hey, I'm going to seize this free opportunity here and submit one of my dreams to you.
Good.
I'm not too worried about this one here. Okay, here's the dream. I'm in the mountains, and I find I can ski down dirt slopes and over rocks, except there's no snow, and I'm not wearing skis. I've discovered a technique by which I can slip, slide, and boogie over bumps, such as rocks and boulders. It's a wonderful, skillful, powerful, flowing feeling, going with the fall line. Now I'm with two other guys. I may be in my 20s, and they're maybe in their 40s. They're a lot better at this than I am. They're longtime rock surfers, retired champions, really. They're showing me the ropes, but they treat me with a bit of disdain, like a tag-along younger brother. At one point, we're out rock surfing together, and I'm having trouble keeping up with them. But then we come to a downhill swoop with a turn and then an uphill, and I really dig in and I'm able to pass them on the turn and really dig in on the uphill part and put a lot of distance between them and me. I rest at the top and let them catch up, and clearly I've won a lot more respect from them. At one point, I see them practicing their moves, jumping up in the air and twisting, and I can see how they looked when they were younger, when they were boys. I can see their youthful beauty shining through.
Oh, what a fantastic dream. So you just go with that end line to start with, you know, where you're looking at older people and seeing their youthful beauty shining through. And what you got in the dream is a transition. At the beginning of the dream, you've got the 20-year-old you, mm-hmm. Which is receiving a bit of disdain from the 40-year-old you. And it's like, you know, how can someone so young be that clever? And we'll come back to what it was that you were actually doing in a minute. But by the time you get to the end of the dream, there's a reversal there, you know, and the kind of the feel at the end of the dream is it's not necessarily age that clocks up the wisdom and the ability to do things. You know, sometimes in your own particular life, if you say you felt you were you were about 20 and they were 40, I'd say at the time of the dream, there was a skill that you developed when you were 20 that by the time you were 40, you held in disdain and that you're now going back and thinking, you know, maybe actually I had it right when I was 20. Hmm. Maybe that, you know, maybe there's something in the approach that I had when I was 20, whether it was abandon, a sense of ability. I liked where in the dream that, as you say, with the rock surfing, there was no snow, it was all easy. You know, the metaphor was that at the time you had the dream, you were just going with the flow with life. You didn't need to go too deep. You were handling the rocks and obstacles along your way and getting where you wanted to get. But there was a part of yourself that went, you know, maybe it shouldn't be this easy, the disdain. And yet the 20-year-old part of yourself went, yes, it can. It can be that easy. Watch me go up this hill. Watch me just do this. And you earn the respect of the 40-year-olds again. So it's almost like sometimes, you know, we can think that things have to be much more complex and complicated. You know, you could be digging into that earth and digging into that mountain and discovering all sorts of things. But sometimes challenges and obstacles are more for glistening over than delving deep into.
That triggers something for me, because often I've been critical of myself as being a dilettante, interested in too many different things, not going really deeply into any one thing. Even this podcast series could be seen as an example of that, in as much as I interview lots of different people from lots of different perspectives.
Yeah, so that makes a lot of sense. And the moment that you get that, I can relate to that, you can, if you chose, go in more deeply.
Yeah.
Or you can just rock surf on by. Yeah, so you've got that. So you know, David might like to, you know, contemplate that a little bit more and think sometime, you know, later this evening on what else was going on for me when I was 20? What can I learn from my 20-year-old self that is still, you know, and hopefully just from, you know, some aspects of our chat earlier today when I was telling you about my particular rock surfing on radio, hip hop radio, doing dream interpretation.
Right.
That might help as well.
Yeah. I felt very good about this dream, actually, because I really liked the feeling. It felt good. You know, it felt like a flying dream or one of those sorts of dreams where you feel really, really fluid and flowing and wonderful. And I just felt good about the sense that I could flow so easily over all these hard things, you know, that ordinarily would be considered obstacles. And so I woke up with a really good feeling.
And that's fantastic. And what I would do with a dream like that, David, is apply a dream alchemy practice. So even though there are no unconscious beliefs to change, to reverse, your unconscious mind at the time of that dream was actually in agreement with your conscious mind, as in, hey guys, we can rock surf any obstacles in life. You can still use dream alchemy to actually really drive that home. So, you know, because you woke up with such, you know, as you say, as if it had been a flying dream with that wonderful flowing over obstacles feeling, I would then use, in whichever modality works well for you, a visualization or a feeling or an affirmation that every day, you know, for the next month, that this is how life is, that I can really summon up that feeling from the dream of that rock surfing. And what you're really doing is reinforcing and reinforcing and reinforcing within every aspect of your being that this is how life can be for you. And so when you do encounter those rocks in life, it just becomes, you know, easier and easier and easier just to surf them.
I like that idea, and I will put that into practice. Now I'm going to give you one more short one of mine, and then that'll do it for dreams. This one, I haven't given a lot of thought, and I'm not so clear about it, so this should be interesting. I have a new pair of shoes, and I want to spiff them up by re-dyeing the sole edges. I'm not doing a careful enough job, and the dye is slopping up onto the leather upper. Also, I'm not happy with the color. I try 3 different colors. I'm trying to apply a reddish Cordovan color, but it turns out silver looking.
Okay, so I'm not going to ask you any questions because I'm, you know, you asked me to do it without interacting with the dreamer.
Okay, either way.
What does the red Cordovan color feel like to you?
It feels like a very rich, a deep and rich kind of color.
Okay, that's lovely.
I'm tempted to say soulful.
Yeah, that's good. I'm glad. and silver?
Silver is, you know, shiny, glittery, attention getting, and I'm quite fine with that.
Okay, that's great. So I know you are, and here's your dream. Shoes, we tend to wear shoes to suit different functions. You know, you wear party shoes to a party, business shoes to business. You know, they say that people look down at your shoes to get a quick idea of your personality.
Yeah.
And our shoes and our dreams can often be about our standing or our image, how we see ourselves, but particularly our standing. You know, our focus in the dream is on the ground and what we're wearing on our feet. So it's like, what's my standing? How am I presenting myself here? And underneath the shoe is the soul. And, of course, dreams do play puns on words, and you verified that by saying that the red Cordovan color was very soulful.
Yes.
The soul on your shoe is your S-O-U-L, your soul. So what you're doing at the start of the dream is going, for whatever reason, when you had this dream and the day or two before, you were reconsidering or just playing around and tweaking at the edges like you were with the soles of your shoes, how you see yourself and how you place yourself in life, whether that's in your personal life or your work life. It's like this: the tops of my shoes are how I want people to see me, and the soles of my shoes, well, that's my business really. But hey, these are shoes where the soles just slightly show around the edge, as they do on your podcast show and probably other areas of your work where you are really showing the real David. And so you're tweaking and working with those, and your dilemma in the dream is whether they should be red Cordovan, really, really, whether they should be soulful, as you said to me, the color is soulful. You also said it's rich, so I don't know whether that's rich in spirit or rich in dollars. You know, you can play around with either and both of those, but it's how much do I want people to see that aspect of my soul? And yet by the same token, maybe, you know, the silver shiny side of myself, which you said you're very comfortable with, the showman side, but you have to be a showman to do a podcast show, that's okay too. So I would leave you to contemplate why am I contemplating this slight tweaking and changing in my life now? How much of my real soul that I normally keep under do I want people to see? How much do I want them to see the Cordovan red side of me? How much do I want to see the silver? And of course, best of all, because you want them to see both, how do these integrate? And of course, although I'm pitching this interpretation as how do I want to be seen, which is superficial, hey, that's part of business and what we do in life, and that's important for us to come to terms to, but then go deeper and say, in my own personal self within me, David, how do I want to feel? How much do I want to be Cordovan red, and how much do I want to be silver?
Very, very good. You've really given me some food for thought there.
Good.
stuff to reflect on. And interestingly, I did make a typo as I typed this dream up, and I spelled soul, S-O-U-L. So that just
that just
reinforces what you were saying about the slips that we make and how significant they are. Well, this has been absolutely delightful, Jane Teresa. And I wonder, as we kind of wrap it up, is there anything that you'd like to say that maybe you didn't get a chance to say?
Oh, I don't think so. No, I've enjoyed our chat.
I will put a link to your website on my page, and I'll also spell it out for people in my remarks at the end of our interview. So, Jane Teresa Anderson, thanks so much for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you, David, and thank you, listeners, for sending in your dreams.
I hope you enjoyed listening to this conversation with Jane Teresa Anderson. Well, as you heard, I started off with a bit of bias against the notion of being able to interpret dreams blindly, that is, without the dreamer's associations. But it's clear that Jane Teresa not only speaks quickly, but has a very quick mind. I'm impressed by how well she remembers the details of a dream after a single hearing, and how quickly she's able to identify the central emotional themes and conflicts, and then formulate a response in which the listener can recognize something of him or herself and is drawn into deeper reflection about the relation of the dream to their actual life. I would say she has a gift, which certainly accounts for her popularity and success on radio. I liked her response to my rock surfing dream. I need to think more, perhaps, about the younger self versus the older self. She chose the ages of 20 versus 40, but I don't think I gave any ages. I think I might have only a slightly different spin on the age thing. I think I have a tendency to project power / skill, etc., onto others, to compare myself to others, as I did in the dream. Not necessarily just older others. By being willing to allow myself to tap into my sometimes suppressed competitive spirit, I was able to zoom ahead. She did give me something to think about in terms of skiing over the surface of the mountain rather than going down. That's the value of getting somebody else's take on a dream. You get a new perspective. I was focusing on how good I felt about being able to skim over the surface, but I could be missing the depth dimension. So thank you for that, Jane Teresa. And another thought that occurs to me just now is I was admiring the youthful beauty of the older athletes. I could see their youthful selves shining through. And I think sometimes I get down on my age. I do a little ageism on myself. And so that could be a call or a reminder for me to be in touch with the with my still youthful inner beauty. In terms of her reaction to my second dream, I really liked her suggestion that shoes could be about our standing in the world. I typically will take the Jungian tack of considering any items of clothing as referring to persona issues, but she really added greater specificity to the idea by talking about standing in the world. Also, as I listen back now to what she had to say about that dream, I'm getting a new take on the soul versus the silver in relation to my podcasting, i.e., how much is it about showing / sharing / developing soul versus making / raising money? And of course, you all probably know that that's an issue I've been wrestling with, to carry advertising or not, or to rely on donations and feeling somewhat self-conscious about either approach. As Jane Teresa put it, quotes, how much do I want to be Cordovan red and how much do I want to be silver? So color me impressed by Jane Teresa Anderson and her own very quick and lively spirit.
I've been laying on this couch, babe. I've been laying here so long. Just waiting for Dr. Dave, babe, to play his shrink wrap radio song. Oh, he plays it so sweet and he plays it so warm. Shrink wrap radio, it's a harbor from the storm. You know he speaks to your mind, babe, but he's really speaking to your soul. Talking shrink wrap radio, babe. You know that's just the way that he rolls. At the end of the day, you know what you'll find. Like Dr. Dave said, it's all in your mind.
Hello, everyone. If my voice sounds different, you'd be right about that. I came down with a scratchy throat a couple of days ago, and I have a bit of a bullfrog voice. Actually, I kind of like it. I'm just hoping I can shake it before Christmas comes, today being December 17th. A lot of times in the past, that scratchy throat has been the precursor for something that gets worse and hangs on way too long. But I think I might be getting better already, knock on wood. I know I didn't feel up to podcasting yesterday, so I'm glad that I'm up to finishing this off today. Speaking of Christmas, I guess this must be our holiday show. I'm not likely to get another one out between now and next week, so I wish you all the warmest of season's greetings. Thanks so much for being with me this past year, and I'm looking forward to our next year together. I've got a new interview up on my other series at wisecounselpodcast.com. It's a conversation with Joel Paris, MD, on the treatment of borderline personality. Dr. Paris is a professor at McGill and also has 20 years of experience researching both biological and psychological causes of borderline personality disorder. You'll get some very authoritative information in this interview. I was recently contacted by a reporter from the American Psychological Association Monitor. That's a publication, kind of a newspaper that they put out. And she's writing a story about psychology podcasts. At first, I got all excited, thinking the article would be all about shrink wrap radio. After I calmed down a bit and reread the email, I realized that would also cover several other psychology podcasts. Still, it's very nice to get some recognition, any recognition, from the American Psychological Association. I'll post the article on our website or put a link to it when it comes out. Longtime listener Alex Reisdorf wrote suggesting that I solicit potential interview questions from you, the listeners. Well, I don't always work far enough ahead to allow that, but there is an upcoming opportunity. I have an interview scheduled with Dr. Richard Davidson, who is one of the major researchers using brain imaging to study meditators. He's a very high-profile guy, and he has had to postpone our interview 3 times now. I'll be lucky to get him. Currently, we're scheduled for an interview on January 11. So if you're interested, I encourage you to go online and read up on him and his work and send me one or more questions that you'd like me to ask him. I won't promise to use your questions, but I'll certainly try to work them in if I can. I've heard from 2 listeners who report that they are unable to download number 225 with Sarah Lazar. I can't seem to figure out what might be the problem. I'm able to listen to it both on the flash player on the page and to download the audio file as well. So I'm not sure what's going on in these 2 cases. If you have any problems downloading shows, do let me know. And if you have any ideas about why these 2 people are having a problem, let me know that as well. Let me remind you to visit our new Shrink Wrap Radio store. You'll see a tab for it at the top of the page. Currently, we're offering Shrink Wrap Radio logo t-shirts and my new CD compilation of 30 interviews related to dreams and depth psychology. You can see the whole list of interviewees on the site, including such notables as Michael Mead, Robert Moss, Charles Tart, Stanley Krippner, Jeremy Taylor, Alan Siegel, Dana Houck, John Beebe, and more. No ads, no announcements, or listener emails. This would make a wonderful gift for the upcoming holiday season. And the cost is just $20 plus shipping. As I've said before, if I can generate enough income through the store and donations, I could spare you the affiliate advertising. And notice there is no advertising in this episode. Please remember to tell your friends, colleagues, family, and so on about Shrink Wrap Radio. I really appreciate it when you mention it on your blog, your Facebook, or Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter. My tweets are at twitter.com/shrinkwrapradio. And let me remind you about our Yahoo discussion group. There's a banner link on our website in the right-hand sidebar. Or you can simply send an email to shrinkwrapradio-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. Let me know if you'd be interested in being a volunteer transcriber. I've had one person emerge who's volunteered to do a couple of shows. I'm really grateful for that, and I could use any others of you out there who might be up for that. So thanks to all of you who've made financial donations, especially appreciative of the people who've renewed their year-long pledges. That provides an important, predictable base, which is greatly appreciated. So if you haven't done so yet, please go to Shrink Wrap Radio and click on that big green donate button.
Hi, this is Dr. Rick Johnson at Portland State University, author of Reclaiming Your Real Self, and you're on the couch with Dr. Dave.
Thank you, Dr. Rick Johnson. Dr. Johnson, in fact, will be my guest on the next episode. Now let's dip into the old mailbag. First, we hear from John, who writes, "Good day from Perth, Western Australia. I just stumbled upon Shrink Wrap Radio and love it. I was wondering if there's any chance you could interview John Betts, a Canadian Jungian analyst. He has an amazing podcast series for free download, which I've been following for some time now at jungian.ca. He took an amazingly brave approach of simply recording a series of lessons at home, beginning with a basic Jungian model of the psyche for self-education and putting it up online in the hope that someone would be interested and find it useful. What resulted was a worldwide community of listeners that he simply wasn't expecting. As of November the 11th, the podcast had been downloaded 185,000 times, of which I am a loyal listener, he writes. A disadvantage of his popularity is that it's hard to get in contact with him because he gets so many emails and the like. Over the course of time, starting from his humble first few experiences up to his current 30th episode, it's hard not to feel as if you've kind of gotten to know the guy, following, I suppose, a small path of individuation as this series progresses. Anyway, as I'm sure many of us would like to chew the fat with John, but never get a chance, it'd be very gratifying to hear him interviewed, to hear him in a different role, out of the pilot seat and actually being engaged by someone else. I hope you dig his site, and good luck, mate. Cheers. And that's from John Kay in Perth. And John, I have been a listener off and on of Dr. Betts, and maybe because I'm already steeped in a lot of Jungian psychology, I have found his presentation to be a bit dry for my taste, a bit cut and dry. But at the same time, I did think that he might be an interesting guest, and so I think I should take advantage of your suggestion. So I've definitely added him to the list. And it's caused me to go back and listen to him some more, I might add. Okay, next we hear from Claire, another Australian listener, who writes, "Hey, Dr. Dave, I love both your shows. Thank you and keep up the great work. I'm a transpersonal art therapist in Victoria, Australia. I have a good 50-minute commute each week, and I love listening in the car and learning as I go." That's wonderful. "I'm slowly getting through the back catalog and was so grateful to learn about Suzanne Maiden's work on self-injury through the Snake Dreams episode you did way back in 2006. That is way back. You said you might have her back to talk about it, and I would love it if you did. I think her work is so valuable, as none of the most noted theorists take a depth perspective. My interest is both personal and professional, as well as self-injury played a large part in my story and journey. Her work validated my own experience and understanding of it, being an unconscious compulsion and soul expression. What would be even better is to look at her sand play work with self-injuring clients. That would combine my two greatest passions. But I'm not greedy. Anything will do." And she goes on to say, "Another fascinating topic suggestion would be body memory in general, or cellular memory in transplant patients. Sylvia Clare wrote an intriguing memory of her experience where, along with changes in tastes and behavior, she also had dreams about her donor, as have many other people." And she goes on to give a couple of web links. So she says, "I'll leave those ideas in your very capable hands. Again, thanks for your fabulous work. Warmly, Clare." And Clare, I have forwarded your email on to Suzanne Maiden, and so she may be writing to you directly, and we'll see what comes of that. Oh, and by the way, Claire, you know, I did do an interview on Jungian sand play therapy with someone else. It's in episode number 135 of Shrink Wrap Radio, so you might check that out if you haven't heard it yet. Next, we hear from John in Ireland, who writes, "Hi, Dave. I've come across your wonderful podcast in recent weeks and have been catching up with archives and current shows. It's a truly superb project, exceptional subjects, topics, and a truly gifted interviewer. Among the best podcast series out there. I know you like to get some feedback on the shows, and just to say you have at least one listener here in the Emerald Isle. Continued success and good wishes." And that's from John Kavanaugh in Ireland. We've had some follow-up emails back and forth. And John, I'm going to be interviewing a friend there in Ireland sometime pretty soon. So keep your ears peeled for that. Paul Moore who has completed his psychoanalytic training there in Ireland. He and I became friends when I ran a workshop there in Ireland a few years back. Now here's one last one from Brad, an American living mostly in Australia these days. He writes, "Hi, Dave. I've been meaning to write back for quite some time. I actually started a response to your last email a number of times, but have been interrupted while at the computer and in between flying back to Australia and getting wrapped up in everything. 2 to 3 months have quickly flown by. Writing back has been on my to-do list for quite some time, and I'm headed overseas this weekend, so I thought I had better get into it. In response to your last email regarding whether I had any questions or comments on my Shrink Wrap Radio t-shirt while on campus at the University of Iowa, the t-shirt did get a lot of looks. I love the curiosity of college kids. I would have normally followed up on them by making eye contact and starting a conversation. However, I was suffering from crippling waves of jet lag induced dizziness, and it was like 90 degrees out. I just didn't have it in me that day. That's excellent that Dacher Keltner allowed you to plug your podcast at his workshop. Several hundred people at a workshop. Awesome. This positive psychology movement definitely seems to have serious momentum to it, wouldn't you say? Yes, I would indeed. I haven't yet listened to the Human Happiness lectures, but I'm looking forward to devouring them during the upcoming travels. My wife and I are spending 5 weeks in South America, Chile, and Argentina. Should be a fantastic trip. I also wanted to let you know that I've recently been accepted into a clinical psychology graduate program starting early next year. Listening and re-listening to the Wise Counsel episodes has certainly had a part to play in informing my decision to pursue further education / training. Can't thank you enough for providing the wonderful content. I dare say that during the interviewing process, I found myself speaking the lingo unconsciously absorbed during the many hours of listening to experts in the field. Hope you have a wonderful upcoming holiday season, spending time with your family. All the best, Brad." And listeners might recognize Brad from our Yahoo discussion group or from the photo in which he's modeling the Shrink Wrap Radio t-shirt on our website. So Brad, is wonderful to hear that listening to these episodes helped you to be fluent in your graduate school qualifying interview. And congratulations to you on your success in that, in getting admitted. From our past correspondence, I know how motivated you are and that you'll do a terrific job. So I think that better wrap it up for today. You can send your emails to shrink at shrinkwrapradio. You can leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site. You have to click on the show, and then that'll take you to the comment area. You can leave voicemails on Skype, where I am ShrinkPod, and you can leave voicemail on our phone at 206-337-0622. Thanks to my guest, Jane Teresa Anderson, for sharing her approach to dream work. And as I mentioned earlier, my next show will feature Dr. Rick Johnson of Portland State University, speaking about his book, Reclaiming Your Real Self, A Psychological and Spiritual Integration. Until next time, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.